I proceed.
Thank you, President Martin. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance to our great country. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Vice President Gladbach. Before we proceed, we have a number of announcements to make, as usual, for tonight's meeting. Please mute all of your devices until you are ready to speak to avoid feedback, echoing, and background noise. Make sure you unmute when speaking and remute when you are done speaking. This meeting is being conducted in accordance with authorizations and requirements contained in Governor Newsom's Executive Order N-29-20, signed on March 17, 2020. The Board Secretary will be calling on all on callers to identify themselves for ease in public comment. Please note that callers will be unmuted for public comment. Please be patient and give the Board Secretary time to unmute each of the callers. This will take just a few seconds. The public may comment on items covered on the agenda during item three, or may do so at the time each item is considered, and will be limited to 3 minutes per comment. We will use the following procedure for approving items and taking public comments. I will introduce each agenda item. I will ask for questions from board members. I will then call for public comments. The board may then ask additional questions and discuss further if necessary, including public comments if desired. Once concluded, I will ask for a motion in a second. After any further discussion, the board secretary will call the roll call votes. Tonight, we have received a number of public comments regarding item 7.2, all of which are posted on the SCD Water website, on board, and were distributed to the directors and staff. Written public comments received after 5 p.m. today were sent to the directors and staff and will be posted on the SCD Water website tomorrow. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting were included in your packet. There is a revised report for item 5.1, which was mailed on board and is on the SCD Water website. Madam Secretary, will you do the roll call attendance?
As I call your name, please say present. Director DePremio, are you present?
Present.
Director Cooper, are you present?
Present.
Director E. Colley, are you present? I might have to unmute him. You got it. Very good. Thank you. Director Mortensen, are you present?
Present.
Director Ford, are you present?
Present.
Director Plambeck, are you present?
Yes.
Director Kelly, are you present?
Yes.
Director Atkins, are you present?
Present.
Director K. Colley, are you present?
Present.
Vice President Gutside, are you present?
Present.
Vice President Gladbeck, are you present?
Present.
President Martin, are you present?
Present.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we'll move on to item three, public comments. I would remind the public to unmute when speaking and remute when they have concluded their public comment. Are there any members of the public who would like to make comment at this time?
Yes.
Mr. Petzold, I saw your name come on the screen. Would you like to make public comment?
I thought I saw Peter come on.
Well.
I'll add. I'm sure that you received my the correspondence that I sent to the SCV Water Board. I really feel that if the ad hoc committee for the renaming of Central Park is going to have any future meetings with city staff or city council members, that that should be subject to the Brown Act, that there be a public announcement of the meeting, and that the public be allowed to attend and participate in the meeting. I think that you're on very risky ground by going forward with this ad hoc committee and involving city council and staff. Any correspondence or any conversation between city staff and city council members runs the risk of being a serial meeting. Certainly, you have enough information before you to bring the issue of the renaming of Central Park before the full board for consideration. The city was very specific in its letter to the SCV Water Board as to what they requested. They want a renaming of Central Park. I believe that it is incumbent on you to refer back to the memorandum of understanding and send it back to the city and ask them to reconsider their decision in light of the memorandum of understanding. It is really not appropriate for you to refer to the lease agreement, which refers to the approval of signs. This is not a no smoking sign. This is not a no vaping sign. This is not a map. This is a renaming of the park, which was clearly determined in the memorandum of understanding dated December 11th, 1995. It has served the SCV Water and City Council very well over these periods of years, in that there is no natural person named on it, which involves any controversy. I think that you have to consider the impact of renaming Central Park on those individuals that have individuals named in the Youth Grove area, and what precedent it sets for future tragedies that may occur here in the Santa Clarita Valley. So to me, the situation is very clear. I insist that should the ad hoc committee have a future meeting with city staff or city council, that be subject to the Brown Act, that there be a public announcement, and that the public be allowed to attend and participate in that meeting. It is not incumbent on the SCV Water to limit that to a closed meeting. You are allowed to allow the public to attend, and I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Petzl. It is not normally our practice to respond to public comment, but in this case, I think I would ask Mr. Byrne to respond only to the issues surrounding the Brown Act. I believe you did receive a response email from Mr. Byrne, but Joe, if you wouldn't mind just quickly summarizing your response to the Brown Act questions.
Yes, sure, President Cooper. So, thank you, Mr. Petzl, for your emails. And we took a look at the information, and our ad hoc committee is purely advisory. I agree with you that we do have the option of it being public, but pursuant to the Brown Act, after analyzing it, this is consistent with how we've done ad hocs in the past. It's a limited duration, limited scope. No decisions are going to be made jointly with the city. So it's our view that the ad hoc committee is appropriately composed and is appropriately able to have meetings amongst itself. Any future decisions obviously will be presented, or recommendations presented by the ad hoc committee to the board at a full public meeting, where there'll be opportunity for the public to participate before any decision is made.
Thank you, Mr. Byrne. Are there any other members of the public who would like to comment at this time?
Yes, I would.
And this is Valerie Bradford. Please proceed, Ms. Bradford.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Valerie Bradford, and thank you for giving me this opportunity. I'd like to speak tonight in support of a certain sector of our Santa Clarita Valley residents. While all of us are struggling to get through this extended season of COVID-19, there are residents that are suffering extensively. Those are our residents that are financially challenged because they are living at or below the poverty level. And that includes approximately 20,000 of our residents, or because they have lost their jobs. Now, I understand there is some assistance being provided for these individuals in the form of suspended late fees and no service interruption, and that is definitely helpful. But if it is much like the moratorium on evictions and mortgage payments or rent payments, once this pandemic is over, the lump sum due will be overwhelming, if not impossible. So I'd like to ask the board if you would consider initiating a program that would totally forgive the outstanding water bills and fees for these families, thus allowing them to truly be free of the added stress of surviving this horrible pandemic and allow them to start fresh as positive, productive residents of our valley. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak, and I cede the remainder of my time.
Thank you, Ms. Bradford. Are there any other members of the public who would like to comment at this time? Are there any other members of the public who would like to comment on item 3, public comment, at this time? Hearing none, we'll move to item 4, approval of the agenda. I would entertain a motion for approval of the agenda.
Gary, could I?
I will second, but I would like to say something about the agenda before we move on to approval.
Did we get a motion on the agenda?
Yes, I move.
Director Planbeck moved approval of the agenda, and do we have a second?
Second, Director Cooper.
Second by Director Cooper.
Yeah, Gary.
And who
I would like to make a comment before we approve it.
This is Ed Colley.
This is Lynn.
Director Colley, please, what is your comment?
I just, sorry, I'm a frog here. I just wanted to respond to Valerie's comment. And because she's probably not fully aware of the law in this regard, but it would be difficult or impossible for us to consider what she proposes under the law, as we are required by law to recover only the cost of delivering water to a particular customer. And there's no provision in the law for us to bill additional fees or anything that would pay for water for others. So. We have looked at that kind of thing in the past, and the California law does not allow it. Your comments would be better directed to the legislature making that possible for a water agency. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Colley. Director Planbeck, would you like to make your comment on the agenda now?
Yes, I would. But I also want to say that I do think we need a water lifeline, which is what she's essentially proposing. Electricity has that, and the telephone service has that. So I applaud her for bringing it up, and I wish the agency would perhaps approach the legislature itself to help with this issue, because there's going to be a lot of people in trouble. So, but what I was going to say on the agenda was that I tried to log in through our website, which is the way I usually do it, and the November 17th agenda was not posted, and nor was it posted under most recent meeting. And I'm wondering, it came up about 3 minutes ago, but I wonder if it was properly posted to notify for this meeting, because many of us receive notifications through email. But for anyone that wanted to go online, they couldn't get online as of 5 minutes earlier. So that's
Director
all I wanted.
Director Planbeck?
Yes.
The agenda has been posted and it hasn't come down. It might have been something with your cookies, but the agenda has not come down. And it's also on the front page of the website. So there's two spots, actually three spots that the agenda can, or the board packet itself can be pulled. And it is in all three spots and has not come down since last week, well, since it was put up. And I'm looking at it right now, and it's coming up fine.
Well, I was looking at it. I'm looking at it right now, too. But when I first went online, all I could get was the November 4th agenda. All right. So and I, you know, I refreshed several times and couldn't get it to come up. So maybe there was some sort of a problem. I don't know. But anyway, I'll vote yes on the agenda.
Director Cooper, did you have something you wanted to say?
Just a comment for Director Planbeck is, yes, I've been able to get it off of the website quite well for the past couple of days.
Thank you. All right, we have a motion and a second. We have any other further questions from the board?
Gary, President Martin?
Yes, Vice President Gladbeck?
Yes, I wanted to give some follow-up information for Lynn and for the public member that spoke. The State Water Resources Control Board is in the process of collecting data from all the water agencies in California on the financial impact to that agency for customers who have not been able to pay their bills. So hopefully something will come out of that, but I agree with Director Planbeck, we should be very supportive of any legislation that may occur.
Thank you, Jerry. All right, hearing no questions on the agenda, I will ask, is there any public comment on item three, item for approval of the agenda? Hearing none, we have a motion and a second. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll?
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director E. Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director DePremio, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kay Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
Or President Martin, how do you vote?
Thank you.
The agenda is approved.
Thank you. We'll move on to item five, special procedures, and we'll turn it over to one of our legal counsel, Mr. Tom Bunn. Please proceed, Mr. Bunn.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board, and directors-elect. I have a mask on because I'm here at the district office, and April is going to come up here in a moment and assist me. Can you all hear me all right?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. What I wanted to do was start with why we're doing what we're doing. As you all know, we just had an election for 6 director seats. And in 2022, we'll have an election for 3 to make up what will then be a board component of 9. And if nothing were done, we'd just continue that 6 and 3 alternation. But the agency determined that it made more sense to have 5 directors elected in one cycle and 4 in the other. That provides more continuity so that you're not making major changes of 2/3 of the board in one election. So with that in mind, SB 387 was passed. The legislature agreed with the agency on that point. And what they provided was that we would change from a 6-3 alternation to a 5-4 by moving one of those 6 seats from one cycle to the other. And the way that the legislature provided that we would do that is that we draw one of those 6 seats by lot, which we're going to do tonight. And that seat will have, the person in that seat will have their full 4-year term this time, to which they've just been elected. But then in 2024, that seat will have a 2-year term. and that will move them on to the other cycle. And every election after that will be a four-year term. So instead of four-year terms, we're going to have one two-year term that begins in 2024, and we will choose that out of the six people or the six seats that just had an election now. And I say seats instead of people because the votes haven't been fully counted. What we're going to do is draw names, and these names are the people who are ahead in the balloting as of this afternoon. So that's why we're going to do it that way. I have here slips of paper with each of those six names on it. And I'm going to show you the slips of paper. And by the way, if you're watching on GoToMeeting and you want to be able to see these names a little better, you can click on View Everyone at the top of your screen and then select the option for who's talking. And I'll get a lot bigger, and you'll be able to see a little better if you want to do that. But I will show you each of these slips and the name on it. And then April is, as you can see now, is holding a box. And she's going to show you the empty box right now. And we're going to put each of these, I'm going to show you front and back. So we'll put these in the box, and then she will mix it up and pick someone out of it. Any questions before we get started?
Yes, Lynn Planbeck has a question.
Yes, Lynn.
Sorry,
Director
Planbeck. I'm a little confused by the staff report. I've reread 337, and I see that this is only supposed to happen once, but it appears from the staff report that it's happening every year, and maybe it was just odd wording, or I didn't read it correctly. It says subsequent elections for the seat of the director chosen by lot to serve a two-year term shall be conducted at the 2026 general election and on the four-year election cycle thereafter. Does that mean it sort of sounds like you were going to have another election in 2026, but you just
I understand your question. Let's talk about what happens to the director's seat that's selected here. That director will serve out the full four-year term until 2024. Then an election will be held for that seat on a two-year term. So that will go from 2024 election to 2026 election. At that time, it'll revert to every 4 years. So the next election after that will be 2030. And it's only once that we do the two-year term.
It was a little confusing in the staff report, but that's what I thought it would be. I just couldn't understand the staff report very well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, then here we go. The first name is Kathy Armitage, and and the reverse of that is blank, and I'm going to fold that up and put it in the box. Next is Ed Colley. The reverse is blank. Next is Beth Brownstein. Reverse is blank. Next is Peter Orzechowski. Even though I messed it up, you see why I asked you how to pronounce your name when I encountered you a few days ago.
You should do it in another section, like fold it one more time. Fold it one more time because they're sticking out.
Okay, I will do that. But that makes them different now from each other.
But you're going to take the other two out since we're only two in, show it again, and then refold them. So we have that one.
Okay. Could you hear, April, they were sticking up so that it could be seen who they were. So I'm going to fold them again. Here's Kathy. Armitage. Here's Beth Brownstein. I keep thinking the camera's a mirror, so I go the wrong way. Ed Colley. This is a new one, BJ Atkins, reverses blank. And Gary Martin. So those are all the six seats that just had the election today, and one of these will be chosen. So April will mix it up.
BJ Atkins.
Okay. So Director Atkins' seat will be the one that has a two-year term from 2024 to 2026. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Mr. President, back to you.
Well done, Mr. Bunn and Secretary Jacobs. All right, with that done, we will move on to item six, approval of the consent calendar. I would entertain a motion for approval of the consent calendar.
We'll move Director Cooper.
Director Cooper, motion to approve.
Second, Mortensen.
Second, Atkins.
Director Mortensen, second. Are there any questions before we call for the vote? Are there any public comment before we call for the vote?
Give me one moment to unmute. Any public comment? President Martin, it does not appear so.
Very good. Please call the roll.
Director K. Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Now I have
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
And she unmuted it once.
Yes.
Mrs. Dunn, did you have a public comment?
Yes. And do you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes. Would you like to, President Martin, is it okay if we stop the roll, as we stop the vote and let Ms. Dunn make her public comment?
Yes, Ms. Dunn, please make your comment.
Okay, thank you. I had a horrible time catching you before you got into the roll call, but what I wanted to mention to you is that this amendment is flawed. These people have, registrar has not certified the votes yet. It doesn't happen until the 11th of December, and so in the law, it says the directors, these people are not directors yet. They haven't even been signed, you know, given the oath of office. So I think that this is definitely flawed, and I don't understand. What if maybe Maria wants to have her votes recounted? What would happen then if she was the one, and you've not even mentioned her? So I think there's a big problem. I think that you should have whoever wrote this amendment up to have it corrected. Thank you.
Mr. President, may I respond?
Please proceed, Mr. Bunn.
I assume, Mrs. Dunn, that you were talking about the procedure that we just did. And what we selected was not a person. It was a seat. So that seat, and the close election is between Director Gutzeit and Kathy Armitage. Whichever of those wins the election, that seat was the one that was chosen and put in the box. And I apologize if I didn't make that clear when we were doing it before. As it happened, that seat wasn't the one chosen, but it doesn't matter who's holding it now or who's holding it in 2024. We just needed a way to identify the seats, and we used the names of the people who are currently leading in the election.
Thank you.
And as I understand it, Mr. Vaughn, this drawing was required to be made the first regular meeting after the election, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. April, please proceed with roll call.
Director E. Cawley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director DiPremio, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbach, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
The consent calendar is approved, and that includes resolution number SCV-181. Thank you.
Thank you, April. We now move on to item 7, action items.
President Martin. It also includes resolution number SCV-182 as well.
Very good. Thank you. All right. As I said, we'll move on to item 7, action items for approval. We do have a presenter for items 7.1 and 7.2. But I would normally ask the general manager if he would like to make any comments before we consider each of the action items for approval. If Mr. Stone is in attendance, I would ask, do you have anything you'd like to say at this time?
Thank you. I am here, and I think I'll keep my remarks brief, as we have presentations on each from Dirk Marks, our Director of Water Resources.
Thank you. Then we'll move on to item 7.1, approval, a resolution adopting CEQA findings for state water project water management tools and authorizing the general manager to execute a contract amendment for the state water project management tools. With that, Mr. Marks, would you proceed?
Yes, thank you very much, President Martin. Next slide, April. The action before you is to authorize a water contract amendment that would increase the flexibility of all contractors to better manage their state water project supplies through a variety of water management tools. And these are basically take the form of water transfers and water exchanges. Do you give the board a flavor as to how important these type of tools can be? You can look to our experience. We're in the enviable position of having a non-state project supply that was not subject to the current restrictions in DWR's administration, the contract. And over the last 8 years or so, we've had executed water transfers involving some 70,000 acre feet that provided our agency with about $18 million worth of revenue. Similarly, we had entered into water exchange agreements with various entities, and we called upon those water exchanges in 2020 and were able to get 16,400 acre feet returned to us in excess of the amount that from our Table A entitlement. Next slide, April. So I'm going to go over various provisions that are in this proposed amendment. Going to give you a with and without the amendment. On the left-hand side is where we are today. We have two options as far as transfers of our Table A amounts, and that is through a permanent transfer. Multi-year transfers have only rarely been approved by the department. Or you can do a single-year transfer to a turnback pool that has a fixed price, and that fixed price has been so low that no one's moved any water using the turnback pool. With this amendment, we would not only have the ability to have permanent transfers, but multi-year transfers, where the buyer and the seller would negotiate the price and the term of the contract and all the other conditions. We could also have single-year transfers, again, where the buyer and the seller can come to mutually agreeable terms. A current contract does not allow a contractor who's selling water in a given year to also put water into storage. That provision would be eliminated by this contract amendment. So a contractor, say it determined that it had 20,000 acre feet of water that it didn't want to use in that year in its service area, it could store 10,000 acre feet of it, say in a groundwater bank outside its service area, and it could sell the other 10,000 acre feet. Next, when it comes to Article 21, transfers of Article 21 or unscheduled water are not allowed under the current contract. This contract would allow certain small ag contractors in the San Joaquin Valley to transfer Article 21 water. Other contractors would have to request permission from the TWR director to enter into that type of transfer. Next slide, April.
Dirk, would you kindly explain what Article 21 water is, please?
Sure. Article 21 water is water above and beyond what the department makes available through our Table A or our regular water supply. It typically occurs when San Luis Reservoir fills, and basically there's more water supply than there is demand for the basic Table A amounts. At that time, DWR makes this extra water available to contractors, and if they have the ability to manage it by putting it into groundwater storage programs, for example, then they have the ability to take that extra water above and beyond their regular Table A amount. Was that clear enough?
Thank you.
Thank you. Also, currently, if you want to store water, or if you have stored water, can't, at this time, transfer any water that you stored outside of your service area to another contractor. You have to take delivery of that water into your service area. With this amendment, you can take water that you've stored after this amendment was signed, and you'd have the ability to transfer it to other contractors should you choose to. Also, with this contract, you have the ability to, I think as I explained before, take and store water the same year that your possibly selling water, and that really is a key provision in that it helps you facilitate a multi-year transfer. So say if you enter into a multi-year transfer over 3 years, you're going to provide contractor Y with a certain quantity of water under the old contract provisions that would prohibit you from putting any water into storage in any of those 3 years. Well, with the new contract amendment, you can store water in any of those years now. With respect to carryover water, and that's water. Carryover water is typically water that we have placed into storage in San Luis Reservoir in a given year, and we use that in a subsequent year to supplement our table A amounts. Under the current rules, you could not transfer that water. With this amendment, you'd be able to transfer up to half of that carryover amount, as long as the contractor receiving it takes delivery of it into their service area. Next slide, April. The other general area where we need more flexibility is with water exchanges. Currently, if you wanted to exchange water, there's been a general rule that DWR has imposed that typically you cannot exchange more than 2 acre feet in 1 year to receive 1 acre foot in another. There's been some flexibility there, but that's been the general rule. There's also been some rather inconsistent rules when it came to any monetary compensation that's associated with an exchange. As I've shown in a subsequent slide, we're gaining more flexibility. Exchanges would now be allowed kind of on a sliding scale from 2-1 to 5-1, depending on what water supply conditions are. And there's a more defined limit on monetary compensation. Stored water and carried over water generally can't exchange any of that water. Now you'd be able to exchange up to half of your carryover amount. Next slide, April. And again, this is that sliding scale. So if the allocation were less than 15% and you entered into an exchange agreement, you could have an exchange ratio of up to 5-1. Between 15 and 25, it's a 4-1 exchange ratio. The graph's a little bit off here. And then if it's 50% or greater, then the maximum exchange ratio is 2-1. Next slide, April. So the maximum compensation is basically the sum of the fixed charges in the year that the water is being transferred. The fixed charges of the contractor who's giving up the water in that year, divided by their that year's allocation of water. And then that comes up with a dollar per acre foot amount that the compensation cannot exceed. Next slide, April. So this contract would not become operational until 24 or more contractors execute the contract. If there's a successful court challenge, at least, and part of it is deemed invalid, then the contractors, at least 24 contractors, would have to agree that they wanted the remaining provisions to stay in effect. In addition, after February 21st, the department may or has the ability to waive the 24 contractor requirement. And finally, if the contractor doesn't execute within 60 days of the amendment going into effect, they could only amend their contract if DWR would subsequently agree to that. Next slide, April. This was reviewed with the Water Resources Watershed Committee, and their recommendation was to adopt a resolution authorizing the general manager to execute an amendment in addition to make the appropriate CEQA findings as responsible agencies that are associated with this, with the environmental documentation. With that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Derek, very much. So that we may maintain some order in the Q&A portion with the board, I will start at the beginning of the alphabetical order of directors. Director Atkins, do you have any questions for Dirk on his presentation?
Can you, Dirk, thank you, it was a good presentation. Can you tell me on the exchange ratio, the logic behind the allocation differencing and the differences and then the ratios? Just what's the logic there?
Well, the DWR's logic was they wanted to see
color number 12, could you mute, please?
They want to see a recognition of the relative value of water for various hydrologic conditions. So when there is a very low allocation, a contractor that's giving up water, for instance, in that very low allocation, could receive more water back in return in a subsequent year when the water supply conditions were better. That was the basic logic there.
Thank you.
With respect to the cost amount, TWR, wanted there to be a relationship to the relative value of water. They wanted a limit there, so they didn't feel like a contractor was effectively going out and marketing their water or potentially gouging other contractors. Those were the general thoughts behind those items.
Very good.
Thank you so much. That's helpful. That would be it, Mr. Martin. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Director Atkins. Director Ed Colley, do you have any questions for Dirk?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you. Director Kathy Colley, do you have any questions for Dirk?
No questions. Thank you, Dirk. Good presentation.
Thank you, Kathy. Director Cooper, you have any questions for Mr. Marks?
No, the changes that I've seen in here, Dirk, are things that have long time been wanted in the state contract that the contractors needed. I'm glad to see this being put together. Thank you, and thanks for the work you've done on this.
Director DePremio, do you have any questions for Dirk?
Yeah, thank you, President Martin. I also acknowledge that these are very helpful tools to make water deliveries more flexible between contractors, and I think they're good things. Question for Dirk is, have any of the other state water contractors taken action to support these recommended changes thus far?
I'm not sure. I believe that it looks like Joe could probably answer that.
Yeah, I believe there are 8 other contractors to date who have approved this. And the schedule for the remaining contractors is over the course of the next month and a half to 2 months.
Out of 29.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Very good. Director Ford, do you have any questions for Dirk?
No questions. Thank you, Dirk.
Very good. Vice President Gladbach, do you have any questions for Mr. Marks?
No questions. Support or I agree with the comments that Directors Cooper and DePremio made. Long time ago.
Vice President Gutzeit, do you have any questions for Dirk?
No, just a comment. I agree these are extremely beneficial to us, and I appreciate the hard work and negotiating that led to these. So thank you. I'm supportive. That's it.
Very good. Director Kelly, do you have any questions for Dirk?
No, excellent job as usual, Dirk. Thank you very much for your professionalism.
Very good. Director Mortensen, do you have any questions for Dirk?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate the presentation, Dirk. I was looking in particular at page 131 of the board pack where the water exchange cost compensation is defined to have a maximum of what appears to me to be our cost. So it looks like it locks us into being able to sell only at a loss or at cost, but never being able to make up for the water we sold at a loss by selling above cost. Is that correct?
The compensation provisions only deal with the water exchanges, the provisions for selling water between two contractors. There's no limit on the cost there. And quite frankly, if a contractor isn't satisfied with the compensation that might be limited in a exchange, they could effectively structure two water transfers that could accomplish the same thing with whatever compensation they were able to negotiate amongst themselves.
I see. So it's your understanding that we can sell water for more than cost to make up for when we sell water at a loss.
Yes, if we found a buyer, found the right buyer was willing to pay that cost. Yes.
Thank you. That was my main question. I appreciate it.
Very good. Thank you. Director Planback, do you have any questions for Dirk? Director Planback, do you have any questions for Mr. Marks? Well, Director Planback, are you on the line?
Looks like she's talking, but maybe on mute.
Director Planback, if you can hear, and if you're muted, please unmute yourself. Well, when she comes back, perhaps she'll have a question. All right. Before we open it up to the further discussion on this item, is there any member of the public who would like to comment on item 7.1 at this time? Is there any public comment on item 7.1?
President Martin, give me just one moment to get to unmute.
Okay.
Okay.
Is there any member of the public who would like to comment on item 7.1 at this time?
Yes, Cam Noltemeyer.
Please proceed, Ms. Noltemeyer.
Yes, I'm looking at this and what you're planning to do. And incidentally, I came across just recently what happened to Castaic Lake Water Board. They were into this kind of financing, and you already are in debt over your head, and that's what they did too. And it was not a good result for them. And I can't see where anyone is saying this is really going to do anything for you. But for the contractors that you work with, that you can move the money around where nobody will see where the water is going. And that's what bothers me, because I've been watching this agency since it started. And I get more concerned about how it's being handled every time something like this comes up. And your CEQA determination tells a lot. And I think that you have to prove to the ratepayers that you're able to handle the current debt you have without going into these places where we're not going to really be able to follow it. Because you get it in there and you can be moving water around for contractors and we never see it.
And I don't think we have that kind of credibility available right now. And I don't know why you were being one of the few leading in this. If it was overridingly looked at by water boards, but it certainly doesn't seem, from what I've read, to be that case. So it seems that as far as a ratepayer, you owe us an explanation of how you're going to get out of your debt before you start going into something like this, which can hide debt and, like I say, move water around to developers that we're never going to be able to see. And I don't have that much faith in our current board. And I just don't think that you should sit, wait and see, let somebody else take the lead in this. You haven't given any good reason why this is beneficial, except as the things I stated.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Noltemeyer. Is there any other member of the public who would like to comment on item 7.1 at this time?
This is Joe. It appears that Ms. Planbeck is trying to make a comment. I think you need to unmute yourself, Ms. Planbeck, or maybe there's a...
We can wait. Is there any other public comment on item 7.1? All right.
Yeah. Looks like she's phoning in, President Martin, so.
Okay.
Let's see, I see a phone in her hand. We want to make sure she does get a chance to ask questions.
I agree.
Hello?
Okay, well, I my mic is on, but I don't understand, and now I'm getting an echo. So I don't know, maybe I'm on, I'm muted in the computer. I don't know why I'm having such computer problems anyway. And I can't even hear this because the echo. Anyway,
you can mute your mic.
Just close this down and see if that helps.
Yeah.
Or maybe I can get off of this.
I can hear you just fine.
Okay, well, I couldn't hear anything because all I heard was myself repeating myself. So I've just gotten out of the program and I'm going to talk to you online. So I have a lot of concerns about this. First, it's my understanding that the previous transfers that we already have that Mr. Marks talked about, the Buena Vista, Rio Bravo, and the other transfers and how much money they're worth, but they aren't affected by this agreement at all. And I read the overriding considerations, and I found it really startling that, you know, it states in the CEQA document that there could be severe impacts to groundwater basins that they are taking the water from. And, here we are trying to work on sustainable water supplies, sustainable water development for basins throughout the state. We have a law to try to address that, and yet we are going to do this, which basically commodifies the water and it increases the price to everybody when they do exchanges. And I can understand if one farmer has fallowed his land and then he wants to let somebody else use the water while the land is fallowing or something of that nature. I can understand the agricultural transfers. I don't understand permanent transfers to cities because I just don't see how it can ever be fixed if you build houses and then you've destroyed another watershed. How, I mean, it just seems like not extremely good planning in the long run. And I wanted to know who it was that, you know, it said that there were negotiated agreements. Was it just negotiated between water agencies? Because it says public agencies, I think. So I assume no one else was in on the negotiations, just the public agencies. That's one question. And then I wondered what the burden of proof was that we are using for overriding significant impacts. And perhaps Mr. Byrne can answer that for me. And then my last question was, how can we be concreting streams in our own area and then destroying watersheds in other areas in Northern California? And I noticed it was all the Northern California agencies who were not buying into this, and probably basically because it's their watersheds that would have to give up the water if this gets, or that would be giving up the water if this goes through. And then I guess my last concern is it looked like this was being negotiated and the EIR was revised and it was in consideration for quite some time, like maybe 9 months or something like that. And I just want to say that it's really difficult to get an agenda packet. You know, it's not like we were all on the Watershed Water Resources Committee and had this presented to us and had a chance to consider and think of all the questions we might want to ask. You know, it's like we get a week to read all this stuff. And of course, I haven't read the EIR, which we are certifying the EIR again. I couldn't do that in a week. So I just feel like if we're going to have these really large decisions, which may affect people throughout the state of California, that we need a little more time on them. We need a presentation at the board and then the opportunity to really look the EIR over, because we are having to certify that we've read the EIR. I haven't read the EIR, and I couldn't do it in the week that we had to consider this. So those are all my questions and also my comments. Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Martin, for really waiting for me and letting me try to get past these technical difficulties.
Sure, Lynn, you're quite welcome. All right. Director Plumback laid out a few questions between Dirk and Joe. Would you like to try to respond to them?
Yes, I think I can start off with maybe some of the questions that dealt with in negotiations. There was a Director Plambeck referred to the PWAs. Oh, those are the public water agencies, or in other words, the public water agencies that are state water project contractors, as we were, of course, negotiating a state water project contract amendment. Those negotiations were conducted publicly noticed facilitated at a professional facilitator there. Members of the public were invited to observe and also could make comments at the close of the negotiations sessions. My understanding is that all of the state water project contractors, whether they are north of the Delta or south of the Delta, are supportive of this amendment. I'm not aware of a contractor who has, at least on the staff level, who was not supporting this amendment. Director Plambeck did bring up the fact that there is the potential for significant and non mitigatable impacts on the as a result of the transfers. If you look at the those findings, the department lays out that it is difficult to know how any specific transfer would impact would have an impact on groundwater levels or subsidence. It lays out that it's possible that these transfers could be a net benefit to groundwater basins. For example, if you had ag contractors entering into 2-for-1 exchanges or 3-to-4-1 exchanges where they're giving up prior year water but getting 3 acre feet back during wetter times, that would be a net increase to the basin. But there are also the possibilities for things to work out in the other direction where an ag contractor could sell water. It's really a challenge to determine or to look at and try to anticipate what a more market-oriented type of transactions will result. And the department also recognized that the state is in the middle of implementing the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, and that all of the rules that all of the basins will be operating under are not fully known at this time. And thus the department, I think, rightfully indicated there are unknowns and there are the potentials. There's potential of going either way, but they, in an effort to comply with CEQA, felt that making a determination overriding considerations was the proper thing for them to do. And I'm probably just about on the edge of where I should stop talking about CEQA and let Joe address any further CEQA questions. One comment that Director Plambeck made dealt with permanent transfers. Permanent transfers are currently allowed under the existing contract, and this contract amendment does not impact the ability of a contractor to enter into a permanent transfer of their table A amount.
I guess that's one of my biggest problems with it, based on the volatility of the climate and rainfall and everything else, to allow permanent contracts that can't be changed in the future is just just seems like not a good idea right now.
Yeah, I mean, no. Well, as I said, it's not part of this amendment, but there's no. A contractor isn't, you know, being forced to permanently transfer their table amount, of course.
Yeah, I would just add that that portion of the contract that allows for a permanent transfer is not already exists and is not being changed by this amendment. And also, I thought Dirk did a great job of summarizing all of it, including the CEQA. But I would just highlight that any future water transfer, an action that a board takes, will be subject to CEQA. So this is really just a contract amendment mechanism that allows for things to occur. And as those things occur, there will be additional opportunity for environmental review.
All right.
And what was the burden of proof for the overriding? You know, I didn't get that far. I'm sure it's in the document, but I didn't get that far in my reading. Maybe you could just summarize that for me, Mr. Byrne.
Yeah, I don't recall.
Burden of proof for the overriding considerations.
I don't recall, Director Planbeck. I'd have to take a look. But we're, obviously relying upon the department's document here as a responsible agency.
All right.
As far as, if I could add to that, as far as what you all are doing, you're just concurring in the department's decision that the benefits of the project outweigh the potential environmental harm. So I don't know if you call that burden of proof. You're making a legislative decision.
Well, when you have significant overriding considerations, you have to have a burden of proof of why you need that. And, to me, it's very difficult to say that we need to possibly, impact another groundwater basin when we concrete streams in our own. And I'm not so sure that the benefits are going to outweigh the impacts. And so that's why I was wondering about the burden of proof. But I guess that's my decision, my no vote. So anyway.
All right. Thank you, Lynn. We have had public comment and we have had questions from all the directors. Do we have any further discussion before we call for the motion? All right. I would entertain a motion for approval of item 7.1.
DePremio moves item 7.1.
Motion to approve by Director DePremio.
Second by Director Ford.
Second by Director Ford. Madam Secretary, will you please call the roll?
Director Mortensen, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Kelly, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Cooper, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director E. Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Atkins, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director Planbeck, how do you vote?
No.
Director Ford, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director DePremio, how do you vote?
Yes.
Director K. Colley, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gladbeck, how do you vote?
Yes.
Vice President Gutzeit, how do you vote?
Yes.
President Martin, how do you vote?
Yes.
This item passes. That's resolution number SCV-183.
Thank you, and thank you, Dirk and staff, BAP, for your hard work in getting us to this point. Thank you. All right, for item 7.2, we'll move on to 7.2, adopt the resolution authorizing the general manager to enter into a cost-sharing agreement for planning activities for a Delta Conveyance Facility and authorize SCV Water's membership in the Delta Conveyance Design and Construction Authority. Mr. Stone, would you like to say anything before I turn it over to Mr. Marks for the presentation?
I think, again, it's a rather complete presentation, and I'd like to let Dirk get on with it while we're still awake here. It's going to be a long evening.
Thank you, Matt. Mr. Marks, please proceed.
Okay. Before I get started in the presentation, I have to apologize that the staff report contains some information that was outdated with respect to the overall cost of the agency's commitment for planning. The information that you see presented in this report is correct, and also the information in the resolution is correct. But as we get into the presentation, I'll point that out to you. So with that, April, if you could give me the next slide. Regarding the overall presentation, I find it up to provide just some background information on previous Delta planning activities, talk about the notice of preparation, which is basically a preliminary project definition for a Delta conveyance facility. What those preliminary estimates of what the benefits of a facility might be and the cost. And I'll have to emphasize these are both really just for purposes of your making consideration tonight on funding future planning or planning for the project. Much more work needs to be done in these areas. Talk about the agreements that are associated with the with the Delta Conveyance Facility at this time, which is a agreement in principle for a potential contract amendment, as well as a funding agreement for planning cost. Then finally, a discussion of an opportunity to join the design and construction agency. Next slide, April. The water resources now. Water Resources Watershed Committee thought it'd be beneficial to kind of give a recent history on Delta planning efforts back in the early 80s. There was, of course, the peripheral canal, which was a 21,000 CFS facility that took water around the Delta, releasing some quantities of water back into the Delta, but ultimately ending up at both the state and federal pumps. That, of course, that along with other provisions of both then SB 200 was defeated in an initiative process. That led to an effort by the department in the late 80s to and early 90s to move or advance a through Delta alternative of Delta levee improvements in the North, Central, and South Delta. that planning process did not bear any fruit. There were draft environmental documents that were being prepared, but they were never adopted by the department. Then about 11 years ago, there was a renewed effort on the governor's part to advance a Delta solution in response to reduced water supply reliability, also in response to continuing declines in the Delta ecosystem. And that was the DHCP, or Delta Habitat Conservation and Conveyance Program, which morphed into the California Water Fix, which was supported by the Brown administration. And that had 9,000 CFS capacity. Governor Newsom's proposed is for a 6,000 CFS Delta conveyance facility, a single tunnel with 6,000 CFS, seeming to be a relative, well, it was thought to be the relatively cost-effective size for a facility. Next slide, April. These are some of recent actions that the Cascade Lake Water Agency Board and the SCV Water Board took. It authorized gap funding for the water fix of some $2 million. Not all of that was spent. The board authorized participation in the water fix in 2018, followed by authorization to join the finance JPA. Of course, 2019, the governor indicated that he would not support the water fix and would support a Delta, a single tunnel project. In January 2020, an NOP was released for that project, and in April 2020, the contractors concluded a negotiations that resulted in a draft agreement and principles that could be used to negotiate or to develop a contract amendment should the project be approved. Next slide. This is an overall schedule for the project. See that mid-2022, it's anticipated that a public review, draft EIR would be available for public review. Final EIR, notice of determination, would not occur till 2023. At that time, various environmental and water rights permitting would be sought after, with the desired outcome of those concluding in mid-2024. Next slide, April. Next slide. So the notice of preparation that defines the reason why you're